Welcome back to today's episode. We're here to talk about Netflix's new series, Ripley. What do movies like Schindler's List, American Gangsters, and The Irishman all have in common?
They're all 3 hours.
That's true. They're all written by the same dude. And that guy's name is Steven Zalian. He's also the guy who did The Night Of, the series that came out a few years ago.
Yeah, because I was confused, but The Irishman, was it a book?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, okay, so Martin Scorsese just decided to take that and
direct it. If it was a book, it must have been adapted, because this guy gets the credit for being the writer on it. He also obviously did Ripley here, and Ripley is not your traditional Netflix program. And the reason it's not is because it wasn't made by Netflix. It was originally supposed to be a Showtime show.
Because the Showtime production shows up within the first minute of
and
the show.
And for some reason, they decided to let this thing go. This is obviously about Tom Ripley, the famous serial killer, or infamous serial killer, the fictional character created by Patricia Highsmith. He's been depicted on the movie screen or television screen at least, I think this is his sixth time. Most famously is probably the Matt Damon version from the 90s with Jude Law.
Or as Tommy Wiseau would say, Mark Damon, as he named Mark from The Room after Matt Damon's character.
Oh, shit, you knew that.
Yeah, because it's in The Disaster Artist.
Yeah, I had a little game here. I'll go ahead and do it. True or false with these ones. Ready? Matt Damon lost 30 pounds and learned to play the piano for his role as Tom Ripley.
Matt Damon loses so many pounds or gains so many
But think
pounds
about this specifically. Anyways. He lost 30 pounds and then learned to play the piano. Where have we heard that recently?
Adrian Brody, right?
Yes, from The Pianist. That's exactly the amount of pounds that he lost and he learned to play the piano. So did that actually happen here, or is that false?
I'll go ahead and say true.
It is true. After viewing the film, Tommy Wiseau was so emotionally moved that he vowed to make a film just as, if not more compelling. The film would become what?
The Room. Yeah. Greg Sestero, he wrote about it extensively. In fact, he was the one who even said that Tommy Wiseau should go see The Talented Mr. Ripley. So that is, yes, true.
Because their friends predated him wanting to even make The Room.
Yep.
Interesting. Patricia Highsmith, who we will talk about, the writer of the Tom Ripley series, because there are a number of books, once attended a London cocktail party with a gigantic handbag that contained a head of lettuce and 100 snails. which she said were her companions for the evening.
True?
True. And she also, I think, bred over 300 of them. She was very close with snails.
100 snails in a bag?
Yeah. One thing about Patricia Highsmith you might not know is, as well as being a crime writer or a psychological thriller writer, she also wrote under a pseudonym, Claire Morgan, and published The Price of Salt from 1952. You know what that is?
No.
It's the first lesbian novel with a happy ending. That's not in a weird way, but it was republished 38 years later in her own name, and it became the movie Carol.
It took until, one that came out a couple years
so
ago.
She's had a lot of her films.
But it took until 1952 before the first lesbian story had a happy ending to it.
Okay, then Patricia, if we get into Patricia Highsmith, she was gay at the time when being gay was a crime. Her mother tried to abort her in the womb and let her know it. So that was like they had a very difficult relationship. And then she became this incredible author, kind of like a hidden genius. But then, like H.P. Lovecraft, where you have to give him props for what his contributions were to like the horror genre, what her contributions are to psychological horror or thrillers, and Tom Ripley, she was also like a huge anti-Semite. So like it's there's always got to be something, right? And so it was kind of disappointing to read that about her.
Yeah, it is disappointing, but it feels almost like BoJack Horseman. I know that BoJack Horseman obviously wasn't an anti-Semite in that show, but also his mother hated him, and then he had a lot of things that he had to kind of overcome as well.
Because she clearly internalized it, and she even compares herself to Tom Ripley in her writing, like in the interviews and stuff. And
Ripley is not a likable character.
So this
is
your introduction to Tom Ripley.
Yes,
I never saw
the
90s movie.
Didn't see the movie. This is the first time that I've ever seen Tom Ripley depicted on screen.
And so Ripley is overview. A wealthy man hires down on his luck grifter Tom Ripley to travel to Italy to urge his vagabond son to return home. Tom's acceptance of the job is his first step into a life of deceit, fraud, and murder. Now, I'm not sure if this is actually his first step, because the introduction, I've seen the first 5 minutes of the show. You watched the full thing, but like the first 5 minutes show that he kind of has already experienced experienced at being a con man. I'm not talking about the foreshadow or the scene that takes place in the future.
Forward. You're talking about after that.
Yeah, where he's just living in New York and he's making these, like, he seems like he's an experienced con.
He's not afraid to scam people, call people. He takes people's mail and then makes a call saying that the checks have never been cashed. And
almost
they
like a Catch Me If You Can, redo but evil.
It. Yes, I actually put Catch Me As You Can as one of the...
Catch Me If You Can
as one of the comparisons, as well as a ton of other things. I even get some of The Stranger, the Albert Camus book that was written in 1960. I get some of that from Tom Ripley here too, because it seems like he lacks a lot of empathy.
Hey, absolutely. He is represented way more immorally, way more like he was in the books than the Matt Damon version.
So the Matt Damon version actually
tried to give him more emotional like credibility. I think that it's been well said that he is a psychopath. This strips the emotion out of it and kind of gives into that black and white version of his character and how he is this ominous presence of sorts. But how did you feel when you first started watching it? Were you kind of surprised by the stark difference between most of the shows? I'll give an example. The last one we did, The Gentleman of Moscow, yes, or whatever, that guy's supposed to be this swell dude. Like, he's living in a terrible circumstance. He's trapped in Russia and he's making the most of it and making friends. This is like the opposite of Tom Ripley, where he has the world at his feet. He can go wherever he wants. In fact, he's traversing the planet.
Yes.
And he's also like this just super duplicitous dude, though. Like, he's like the exact opposite of them.
He's able to figure things out. But it does seem like, almost going back to BoJack Horseman, his friend, who was voiced by Aaron Paul, I don't remember the character's name.
Todd,
this is kind of similar, but Todd is always given these opportunities. That's part of the joke within the six seasons. Here, Tom Ripley is given the exact same thing. He's able to go to Naples basically for free. He is given all the money because this person named Herbert Greenleaf. He wants Tom to go over there because some reason he believes that Tom knows his son Dickie, and Dickie, he wants to come back and run this family business. That is the most like insane thing. This
just
Greenleaf
opportunity
person,
fell in front of his feet.
It's not just the fact that he's able to travel the planet, go to Italy, which looks beautiful. I really liked how the show looked with the black and white. I thought that it made like just everything look even better.
Black
but,
and white, I feel like it's had this uncanny valley since the 1960s and 70s when it went out of style, where because our cameras got better and people stopped using film with it, there was just something wrong that made it look artificial whenever places do it. Like, there's been a lot of shows that have done independent episodes.
I was going to say that, yes. They either do like a black and white episode, they do a silent episode.
But name some, because I do have a few lists.
I have The Walking Dead as one. I know Buffy the Vampire Slayer did it, but that was more supposed to be kind of the silent era. And then I can't think of really any others.
Yeah, After Party did it really recently.
Yeah, and then It's Always Sunny did it as well.
It's Always Sunny has done it. WandaVision did the first episode
of
that.
A lot of comedies, yeah.
Black Mirror, not a comedy, did it for the episode with the...
Metalhead.
Yes, Metalhead. And Pretty Little Liars. I looked that one up. I promise I haven't seen that one. You have all these ones that do one episode offs, but I don't think they have the guts or they feel that confident in being able to do a full series like that. But what do There Will Be Blood, Magnolia, Nightcrawler, Good Night and Good Luck, Boogie Nights and Suburbicon, and Trick or Treat all have in common?
I would say that the main characters are just crazy in all those.
Well, not in Good Night and Good Luck, but for most of them, that's actually true. The cinematography for every single one of those is the same. And
that
he's
is
the same dude.
That is an insane resume.
Yes,
to have.
Right? Isn't it? Like, that is some substance there. And so he teamed up with the guy who did Schindler's List, American Gangsters, The Irishman, and The Night Of, and said, well, let's work together on this. And they ended up, so that is why I think, because a lot of those, Good Night and Good Luck, at least, was in black and white. And a lot of them have like a lighting thing. I think there's a lot that has to go into the direction, the lighting that made this so beautiful and successful.
Well, and I think also putting a show in black and white, especially the full season, it can change even the tone of your show.
Absolutely.
It can change the message as well. Well, I remember Logan, even when that came out in 2017, they were showing screenings of it being in black and white for like different reasons. I remember one of my professors talking about like this. Yes, no, the show looks great. But going back to what I was saying, Greenleaf, he doesn't even know why he thinks that Tom knows Dickie. He just suddenly is like, oh, you must know him. And then Tom kind of plays along being the con man that he is. And is like, yes, I'll go to Dickie and I'll try and tell him to come back here or come back home.
I see he's credited credited Herbert Greenleaf, but so is Emily Greenleaf. And Emily Greenleaf was played by Ann Cusack, who is one of the three.
Oh, I would not Joan be able to place her.
Yeah.
Well, she's only in it for a couple minutes. She goes through some photos.
Boys.
Yeah, she goes through some photos of Dickie and is kind of showing them to Tom.
I was wondering if maybe she had been part of the reason why her husband was so embracing of the idea that he knew his son.
I don't know, but I think that they're obviously going to have a bigger part in the story later on, because I can't imagine
they're billed as recurring. The main stars, we haven't really seen too much besides the main three, but the main character here, so Tom, he then just immediately jumps on a plane, or what does he do?
Yeah, he goes on a train and he actually writes his aunt, and we realize that his aunt has been paying him some money, which is weird because he's not living in the best place. He's living in an apartment in the 1960s. It's
in New
kind
York.
Of rundown.
And so New York is still expensive, and it reminds me a little bit of Adam from Girls, because his character, I remember, relied on his grandma or something paying him like $200 a month or something to help with rent. And I also remember Michael Scott in The Office saying something similar about his grandma, where every once in a while she would send him money on his birthday, but more and more often she'd been sending it every single month. And that was just, and he didn't make the connection, you know?
The aunt's introduction is strange because we don't actually ever hear her speak. We do see her as he's writing to her and Tom Ripley. They have a tenuous relationship. But as he's writing in the letter, he's talking about how like he's so mad at her for just a ton of different things, but she's getting a dentist appointment as he's doing so, and that's all we ever see of her in the episode. So I was wondering, maybe that comes into play later on probably as well. But about 30 minutes into the episode, and this was kind of strange with the slow, purposeful pacing of this series, we don't actually get introduced to Dickie and his girlfriend Marge until 35 minutes in. Now, this is a 45-minute pilot. I know that the pilot says 50 minutes, but that's because there's 4.5 minutes of credits.
That's so actually not that much in today's world.
I mean,
I've been on Apple series where there have been like 10 minutes of credits.
But they didn't do any after thing. They weren't like, this is how the show was made. Mm-hmm. They were just like, this is it. So yes, he sees Dickie. He tries to play it off like he knows him. And then Dickie doesn't really know him at all. He doesn't remember him, obviously, because they never actually met, but does believe that he knew Tom in kind
Gullible
of a past
enough.
Life. Yes. And then they end up having dinner together. Tom goes back to his, to this new hotel when he's in Naples, and then starts to act like he's Dickie. He's even talking to himself.
He's already started to do that.
This is at the very end of the first episode. It's the last scene we see. He's talking to himself in the mirror, and I assume he's going to try and take over Dickie's identity or something. And what we've seen of Dickie so far is actually he's a pretty likable character. I even watched a little bit of episode 2 just to see where the show was going. More stuff in the first 10 minutes of episode 2 happens in that than it did in the first episode. Because you might think to yourself that Tom is going to kind of use this lie throughout the whole entire series. But no, actually, in the first scene of the second episode, he goes straight to Dickie and is like, look, this is what happened. Your dad told me to come here. He tells the whole entire story. And Dickie is like, I 100%, like, I understand why you did it. You had this free chance to go to Italy and see this beautiful place. And it seems like they're going to become friends.
So do you think that this was like a 3D chess move by Tom to kind of like, I know that Dickie will accept me if I tell him the truth?
Yes,
here?
I think that is 100% the case.
And what does Marge think of Tom?
Marge, at least from my side, on episode 2, and it's even shown in the dinner scene
we're
episode
technically
1.
Supposed to be
I know, but it's shown
a hard
in
man to find, which
it's
is
shown,
the first episode.
It's shown in the dinner scene in episode 1 that she's suspicious of him. She doesn't exactly know what the case is, but she knows that she should be kind of wary. At least that's what Dakota Fanning looked like.
Yeah. Johnny Flynn, who plays Dickie, have you seen him before? I know you have, but like he was the main character in Lovesick / Scrotal Recall. You've seen his co-star in quite a few things. The guy from Sex Education.
Sex Education.
More recently, he was in the brother or whatever.
He was in The Gentleman's.
Yeah, he was in The Gentleman Show, the Guy Ritchie one.
And Endeavor and a ton of other things. But yeah, no, I never would have guessed that was him.
He also stars in his own band. Like I think he's the main singer of a fairly successful band. One scene you skipped over, I feel like, which needs to go back to because it's got a character that I want to mention, is Alvin McCarron.
Yes, that was in the first 10 minutes. He's in a bar.
Yeah, he's played by Bokeem Woodbine, who's most famous, from my opinion, from Fargo, where he like really took over a season where he had like this weird perm in that. But in this, he like tracks down Tom
Ripley.
He's
the person that tells him about Greenleaf.
Yeah, because he literally says the title of the episode where he says a hard man to find.
Yes, he somehow already knows who Tom Ripley is. He has
I think those like script and directorial decisions of like we're not going to show the process of tracking this dude down.
Because no one really cares.
Yes, no one cares about that stuff. Overall, what do you think the biggest twist of this episode was? Just the fact that he was starting to mimic?
It's funny you say that. I would say, the final scene, because it's almost like the other black girl, where it's like in that series, I remember, I probably like that series more than this, but there wasn't a lot that was going on. But
You liked the other black girl more than this one?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I think, because there was like so little story going on whenever any type of weird thing did happen, like maybe not as weird in other shows, but because there was so little happening, it was always like, oh, what's going to happen? Because if he's mimicking Dickie.
Well, remember the first scene. What's the first scene of the show?
Yeah, the first scene was actually the most interesting. It's 1961. He's in Rome. Again, it looks beautiful. He's in this huge staircase and he's dragging down this dead body. And then we hear a girl and I think Italian from upstairs saying, who's here or is anyone there or something like that. And then Tom Ripley starts really like,
no, he freezes. I saw that part. Remember, I saw the first 5 minutes and he freezes and there's this intensity and you're like locked in the first couple seconds of the show as the viewer.
Freezes for a second, but then right after
after there's been like a couple, like you could count them. There was probably like 5 Mississippi seconds. Then he starts moving.
He starts moving a lot faster though than was before. Yeah. There's an intrigue there.
So the comparisons I would make is like because there's been so many versions of this character, you could look at him as like a Jack Reacher or John Ryan type, where they just keep on pumping out different like characters playing him. Again, Matt Damon versus Andrew Scott, especially Matt Damon playing in his mid-20s versus Andrew Scott in his late 30s, even though he's 47, I think, as an actor.
And so it was Jude Law playing the Dickie role
in
the original
and
film?
he was also in his mid-20s, I think, at that time. I would also compare, because it's a book being translated in a book from the 50s or earlier, it's like Mansoor Spade in that way, because we've seen several different versions of his character, also in black and white originally.
I don't know. I mean, like, we get the private detective, Al McCarron. He seemed almost more like a Mansoor Spade type than I felt like Tom Ripley did. It reminded me of Mink. The Netflix, obviously, the movie.
Yeah, because black and white,
but also you have the dislikable main character. And then even the way that this was shot, again, I like the way it was shot, but it reminded me a little bit of some Wes Anderson things, because you have some instrumental in the backgrounds and just a very odd story in and of itself.
I did hear the Roy Orbison, like, In Dreams song that popped in there. He's like this operatic kind of old 50s thing playing on the radio.
They have those type of songs throughout the whole entire
They also episode. Filmed in some pretty incredible places. One of the places when they do that beach scene where he first meets Dickie,
yes,
and they talk about that a lot in some of the interviews, because as he approaches, the shadow that's cast on them because it's so bright outside was like that was an in the moment decision. They were just like, whoa, like this is perfect. That was the same beach that they filmed Wonder Woman at, the Amazonian island.
Wow. Well, there's not a battle that shows up in Ripley.
Some of the staircases, I think the ones in New York were some of the ones that were used in John Wick shows, because John Wick loves stairs.
I remember in the first couple minutes of The Continental, there was that huge staircase scene that happened.
Okay.
So, yeah.
I don't know if they used the same ones from The Continental to the movies, but I wouldn't be surprised if they had. But where were we going? Oh, the reviews. So what did you overall think?
There is a strange, endearing aspect to this. But I also feel like just the first episode was so slow that I would have to give it actually not a passing grade, a 5.5 out of 10.
Wow. You speak for yourself. I have the reviews here. I want you to...
Oh, are they huge?
Oh, hugely. Yes, critical acclaim. They did the full series in black and white. Ripley review, Andrew Scott is absolutely spellbinding. Guardian gave it 5 stars.
No, let me talk about Andrew Scott.
I've only seen
he is in my pros. I can even show you where it is in my notes. He is. I've only ever seen him as Moriarty. Really, I think he was maybe even Inspector of the James Bond film. He was the best that I've seen him
so
in here.
You've locked down your 5.5 rating.
Yes,
but go ahead and do you have any more pros that you want to put in there before I get into the rest of the reviews?
There was a funny trunk scene. So before he goes to the beach, he actually tries on a swimsuit. Mm-hmm. And you see him almost literally the only thing covering him is the swimsuit. And that was funny. So that's all I have. Aside from the first scene probably being the most interesting to me.
All right. Andrew Scott is absolutely spellbinding was the Guardian review, followed by Andrew Scott is utterly charmless in Netflix's Somber Ripley. Variety wrote that one. I just love how everything was about this dude for the most part. Andrew Scott dazzles in Netflix's gorgeous noir thriller. That was Collider. Andrew Scott elevates a classic con man. That's IGN. Ripley review. Mr. Ripley is talented as ever. Because the talented Mr. Ripley. That was AB Club. Ripley lets the talented Mr. Andrew Scott lead an incredible remake. So
It seems like it's just Andrew Scott all around.
The remorseless Mr. Ripley, Andrew Scott. Scott's phenomenal take on Patricia Highsmith's Con Man anchors a deliciously mean adaptation, Vulture. It's impossible to overstate just how good Netflix's Ripley is, the Daily Beast. And overall, it has a 7.9 on IMDb, but that was only with a few hundred reviews.
It's just the first episode. It takes him 30 minutes to get to Naples, and that's where the
it does have a pacing
show
thing.
Is going to take place.
A lot of these places we're talking about, while you're watching it, you get so hypnotized by what it looks like because of how great the lighting is, the cinematography. There's not a lot of shows that actually deserve the credit for something like that because it's easy to just be like, oh, it was great, the cinematography.
No, but
this is, from what I was reading, it just seemed like they spent so much time that you could tell as an audience person, it didn't matter what the characters were doing. You were just kind of entranced by what you were seeing, like even the facial expressions or just while they were sitting down.
Well, there's some really cool things like you saw in the first scene, the statues that they keep on going to. But there's even
one
a
of
shot.
Which was just a sporadic, again, decision because they had made their way to Italy to film the thing. And then they were like, oh, look, an amazing statue. Let's put it in here.
But when Tom Ripley is going away, you get this landscape shot of New York all in all, and that looked amazing.
Yes,
I felt like
but not enough for you to feel like you want a plot.
There's so many shows that look great nowadays, and yes, they're not usually done in black and white, but I need to actually have more to intrigue me to keep watching.
The lifeline I'll give you here is that yes, the show has been called spectacular for its visuals, and it in the pacing, everybody admits is different, but because it's by such a great director, they've given him the account. And by if you continue to watch the show, I think that it just gets better and better and better. The language barrier, they talk a little bit about how like once Tom Ripley gets to a different, like he doesn't,
once he gets
even though he's a master con man, he's not like a genius. So it's not like he knows
different languages. He's not able to communicate with anyone. He knows a couple words in Italian, but whether it's the person at the hotel that he's talking to, anyone who's not digging, he speaks to a couple different people once he gets to Italy.
Yeah.
He cannot communicate with them at all.
And I think that's in the original books as well. It's funny though, because Patricia Highsmith chose to go live in Europe, even though she's retained her American citizenship. She really liked some of the social programs that they had there. And she didn't, like, she was called a recluse, as one of those authors are, but she hated that term and she refused to admit it to herself. But it's funny because she also admitted that in France, she couldn't speak the language. So like,
oh, yeah, she's totally Tom Ripley then, because that's exactly what happens to him.
She doesn't murder people.
Yes, but he gets off that train. I'm talking about when he's speaking to people. He only knows like grazie and la porta as door. He gets yelled at by some people for that. Yeah, no, he's not able to communicate with anyone. Dickie, again, and Marge are the only people that speak English.
I remember when I went to Germany and I went up to a hot dog stand or a sausage stand or something, and like they had one that said, like, I could tell it was saying hot dog with ketchup, and because I could only say the with ketchup part, I went up there and I just said ketchup, and the guy like gave me the weirdest look and he's like, you just ordered ketchup, and I was like, no, I mean hot dog with ketchup, because then I just switched over to English and the guy was like, okay, fine.
So
like
guy-
he took it as he made the mistake, and I was like, yeah, take it that way. All right, thanks for listening, we'll see you on the next episode, hope you enjoyed this one. Bye
bye.